Dragi nezajančniki, danes spet nekaj drugačnega. Jaz ne vem, če to veste, ampak jaz snemam še en podcast o angliškem jeziku, Product-led podcast, in ta teden smo objavili eno tako super epizodo z Leo Tharin, ki bi jo rada tudi delila z vami. Tako, Leo sem spoznala približno poleti in takrat je bila tako malo na LinkedInu, ja, pa ne vem, če bi. Drugače ima ženska 20 let izkušen in je vrhunska produktna menedžerka, tako da meni je bilo čisto isto zadeljenje znanja, neugodno misel, da tako sposobni ljudje ne bi delili teh svojih konceptov pa znanja. Tako da sva se počas začele pogovarjati, pa je ogromno naredila še sama in zdaj pač tako v roku pol leta, zdaj le gledam doma 13.300 followerjev, či še malo manjka pa me bo prehitela. Engagement ima tam po 500 tisoč lajkov tudi pride, noro je, zamenjala je službo vmes, ful je dobila consulting priložnosti, tako da evo, tukaj je ena epizodica, tokrat v angleščini, z Leo, ki upam, da vas bo navdušila, da tudi vi redno dokumentirate svojo pot pa delite te update na družbenih omrežjih, ker lepe stvari se naredijo tistim, za katere vemo, da nekaj delajo. Ajde, lepo vodite, uživite epizodi. Čau! Dear Product-led family, this episode of How I Got Here will be a little bit different. Today, we will tackle the phenomenon of Leo Tharin in the product-led field. In merely 5 months, Leo grew her social media followership from 500 to 10,000 followers. She has successfully positioned herself as one of the go-to experts in the field. Yeah, followers are the vanity metrics, I'm sure of that. But she has also found numerous business opportunities, developed excellent relationships with other industry leaders, and built fantastic knowledge sharing channels for product-led. In this episode, we will unlock her path to success and substantial impact in the product-led movement that she has made. And hopefully, this case will inspire you to lead your own voice to the greatness of our area and start it to really thinking in public. Leo, how are you? I'm so excited to have you here.
That was such a fantastic introduction. I want to meet this person. That was so good.
Oh, can you build upon that? Because you have recently started a new business endeavor and there are so many exciting things going on in your life. Would you give us a little gist?
This is what I love, right? So like, I really love hearing about how others are summarizing me. So this is already helping me to also understand the value proposition. I mean this unironically, because I think a lot of you, you know that, right? And I think your opinion has always been helpful for me to kind of, you know, define what I offer in the end, because, you know, it's like a product. In the end, our personal brand and the way that we are is in the end like a product. You need to convince people of the value proposition that they can trust you, that this is worth their time. And they listen to you. They might consume your content, or like they hire me as a consultant, they experience the value. And if they like it, I get recommended to someone else, or like I can continue. And this is in the end, the basic product cycle that we have. You promise something, you use it, you get recommended. It's kind of like PLG, right? Like product-led growth. We're trying to get things in. And that's what I kind of try to, everything that I do that we are going to talk about today is under that kind of guiding principle. And that's what I kind of offer in the end. If you want to be more specific on like what I actually write about, and then I can talk about that too, of course. But yeah, that's what I do in the end.
Fantastic. What a way to hit up this podcast, because when we first spoke, I think it was August or something like that, you were just like starting this journey, right? And so much has happened since. But before we dive into the last 6 months that completely changed the way how you are perceived on social media, let's talk about everything what happened to get there. So what was your path? What were the main career milestones that got you here?
So I started out as an API C++ developer, and I was comically bad at it, right? So like I used to be an engineer and I was very, very bad at it. And I'm not just saying that, I was really bad at it. But it really gave me some appreciation. So I learned coding originally also in school. And that's what I thought would be my career path. And then I noticed how bad I am at it in a productive setting, you know, like in an actual company. I was 19 years old. That was a long time ago. That was over 22 years ago. And then I pivoted to information architecture and UX research. Basically, I did that for 10 years. The only thing that's interesting about that is that I liked understanding why people do things. And that gave me a lot of appreciation about customer centricity, understanding why people do what they do, jobs to be done, that kind of stuff, blah, 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 right? So like I did maybe, I don't know, I never did the count, but I think like I did over 1,000 interviews over my career. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this number is too high, but this is what I look at in terms of what I did in these 10 years. And then the most important pivot was going to product management. And that's what I did for 12 years because I got frustrated in understanding what people want, but I could not build products to actually address it. And you know me already a little bit. Whenever I get frustrated about something, I start to dig in, I try to change it, and I try to actually deliver some value over it. So this is when I actually pivoted to product management. And it was very, very rocky, to be honest with you. It was very difficult because I was not a good product manager for a couple of reasons. First of all, I did not have a growth mindset. I thought that I knew everything. I had bad managers. I'm not blaming it on them, but they also didn't really get me out of this. I thought that I know everything, right? You know, like you read a book and now, oh yeah, now I know everything about product management. And that was very difficult for me because I'd never really had someone to kick my ass and tell me, Leah, you suck at this. You need to learn a couple of theoretical foundations. And ironically, this only happened like 4 to 5 years ago when I started to really break down, like, what do I know? What do I do not know? And then I started to really I changed the methodology on how I learn. And I started to assume that I maybe don't know everything. So that's what it was. And now we're here, right? So like, this is like a result of how I changed the way that I learn and also try to approach things. And now I'm an actual product leadership, but I still, in the end, I create organizations that are fun to work in and that create tremendous value, hopefully. And by reducing friction and making people autonomous and, like, you know, understanding the customer, all this kind of jazz that you probably know about. And that's what I would say has been my development. And I failed a lot on the way. And I talk a lot about my failures. And that's one of the differentiations on what I do different than others, I think. But we can talk about this too, of course.
Totally. That was extremely interesting and well put. But just like one missing puzzle that I would like to touch upon a little bit deeper is, how did you comprehend that product-led growth is something that you believe in? How did you first got in touch with that specific discipline? No. And here I really got to compliment you because allegedly your slides are right now a part of an MBA curriculum. That's pretty phenomenal. Phenomenal.
That was a huge ego boost. Oh my God.
How it wouldn't be, huh? No, that's freaking amazing because like you have structured everything so beautifully, but I want to deep dive into how did it make sense for you? How did you start with that?
So the interesting thing, and let's get one misconception out of the way. So I think what product-led growth is quite important to understand before I tell you how I got into it. So the very first thing in any way is that this is not a new thing. It is a name for something that starts to happen more and more in B2B. That was the original source of this. Now we are still using it now also in B2C businesses, but this is about a movement that is happening in B2B. It's kind of a behavior that happened in B2C that is now going to B2B. Everybody who tells you that this has not happened before, like 5 years before or whatever, does not know what they're talking about because customer centricity, giving someone something to test, is not something that has happened now in the last 5 to 10 years. The difference is because of the commoditization of markets, you have more options to choose from. Buyers are much more informed. They have a choice. If I get two offers for doing the same stuff, like, I don't know, I need to have a solution for my sales channel, whatever. I can now have a choice whether I want to talk to a Salesforce agent for 3 hours and then they tell me how great everything is, or I can go to HubSpot and just onboard myself and try out the product. And the big difference here is that you have choice. And if you find a good fit for the problem that you have, you're going to take the one that is easier for you. One of the fundamental truths is that people do not want to talk to other people for making their decisions as long as possible. That is not a universal truth, but it is a very much, like, let's say this goes through the entire market at the moment. So this is what I talk about when you talk about product-led growth. I did product-led sales already 5 to 6 years ago in some of the companies that I was, and I did not know the term existed because product-led sales is kind of like an evolution of product-led growth because you still need salespeople, but empowering sales with data to make better decisions, to qualify their leads, to know, to have a better hit rate, like a lead is not anymore like, oh, Maya has 30 employees. It becomes something like Maya is using the product. And if Maya uses the product a lot, she's interested in it. And that's how we go to this. So yeah. I was exposed.
Even if I register with Gmail, I can still be interested in
yeah,
the
this
product.
Is something, yeah, but this is the thing, right? Like we're not looking at people anymore as like these demographic things where like, oh, she's a woman, she's she has this age, she has that many kids, or she's living in this particular country. It is about the behavior that you exert. And that is essentially product-led growth to leverage the behavior that we can track and then leverage and monetize in the end. So it's not a new concept, but it has not happened that much because customers didn't have choice. In the past, it was more about convincing people to buy stuff. And now it is about showing products, giving something away because you trust that the product itself can convince. And that's the main difference. We've always used to do this. I've done this in other companies as well. So the answer to your question is, I've been doing it for myself in my career for over 15 years, but the term itself and the conceptualization of it, as we are looking at it today, like if you want to just say like, yes, I'm doing product-led growth, I only started to say about 2 years ago. Let's just say that, right? Because I was not aware of like this, how do you say, like the definition that the market is now using for it, because I think it's a very useful term to use instead of just saying like customer centricity. Like if you're really customer centric, then you should get to the conclusion that people want to see your product instead of being talked about it.
Love it. And the other reason why it resonated with me deeply is that I kind of feel that it attracts the right type of people, people who are into data, people who have good products, people who are, as you said, customer centric. It's just like unites a couple of values of modern business that you and I probably agree with.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, people who tell you that they are data-driven, right? Like everybody's data-driven. Well, okay, cool. Yeah. So what data do you use?
I track my steps.
Yeah, I track my steps. Well, it's kind of data-driven. If you make a decision out of it, like 10,000 is not enough. I need to do 15,000. Okay, fair enough. But like in the business term, just looking at data is not good enough. Like in the sense of, okay, we are making decision based on our revenue. That works exactly until you have more than three people, right? As soon as you start to have more people, you need to start to track customer success. Okay, in order to influence the revenue, we are tracking how many documents are being processed by each customer. That's already the first one. So now you're starting to separate the money metrics from the value metrics of the customer. Even this simple step does not happen in a lot of Series A's or Series B's that I have looked at. So you're tracking now something that is like has nothing to do with money. We just think the more documents that someone processes, the more likely they're going to spend money on it. And there's a direct correlation to this. There's a guarantee that this is happening. So now you're gathering this. Now you need to surface it. You need to have a dashboard. You need to be able to have other people who do not know SQL to look at this, your engineers. And then you need to leverage it. So this needs to go into your decision process. If you do this, then in my book, you can call yourself data-driven for all I care. But most people actually are not, they're not even at this level. And you would not believe how big the companies are that are not at this level. And that's kind of sad.
It's sad, but on the other side, what you described here in my growth hacking world, we would call that North Star metric, right? So does the product perform? Do people using it? Is it bringing the value that it's supposed to bring? So yeah, I could call you growth strategies for just like being aware of this metric, which is great. But nevertheless, when we first spoke, Leah, I do remember that like it was a little bit of a special conversation. I don't have a lot of those. I'm not like randomly writing to people on LinkedIn that they should be posting more. It's not my habit. Plus, I like my high quality content. But just like reading your comments and your argumentation, it was so good that I just like initially something in me screamed, she should talk more. She should be sharing more of this. And I was so happy to observe this journey of yours, how you started to really, in your elaborative and very like reasonable fashion, start thinking and building in public even. Since there are a lot of experienced professionals listening to this podcast, could you walk us through this journey, how you transitioned there as a person as well as a professional?
So that's a very broad question, and I hope I can answer it adequately, because it goes a little bit into a lot of insecurities and things that I believe to be true. So first of all, you need to understand about me that I am dealing with a big imposter syndrome, not so much anymore as I used to, but I had to deal with a lot of imposter syndrome. And that means that I always felt like whatever I say as a woman, as a professional, will be judged, and then other people will not agree with it, and then I will be diminished in my value in their eyes. That was always a very, very big thing, regardless of whether I had leadership positions or not, because I always switched in my career between leadership and operational roles. This was a common thread going through. And one of the things that I tried to do back then was, as I said, I did not have a growth mindset. So what do? You pretend that you know, right? You're always saying things like, yeah, I know already, right? And it makes it impossible to deal with you, because you start to create this kind of image of someone that is not authentic. And if you always pretend, let's say you convince people that you know everything, people will not surface knowledge to you anymore, because they think, well, okay, either she knows already or she doesn't want to learn. And that is limiting your growth. So that was the first thing that I had to actually deal with, right? So that a couple of years ago, I really needed people that I respect, that I deeply respect in their behavior and the track record that they have in this industry, to tell me, Leah, you can do so much more. You know a lot of stuff, but you also have a lot of gaps, and you should talk about it. And this did not really strike with me back then, really. I cried a lot about it. I was like, why do these people not think that I suck and all that kind of stuff? But I got it around eventually. And one of the things that was a more practical thing is that I originally decided 6 months ago to start writing and putting myself more out there, or not 6 months ago, but more like a year ago, because it's very difficult in this industry to hire good product managers, right? So like, there was a very immediate need. So like, good product managers are very rare. And the reason for this is that our field is so diverse. It's not hard to find a good product manager, but I want to find the perfect one for my position that I'm hiring for. So as a product leader, it's very difficult to find good people. And originally I thought, hey, if I strengthen my brand, my personal brand, the way that people see me, because I love to work with people that inspire me and can cover two things. The best people always go where they can learn something, where they can live through an experience where they come in some company and they leave better, whatever that means, right? Like whatever they do in the middle. And I also firmly believe that if people do take care of your growth, you will also deliver the best product work in your life. And if you do that, then it's going to lead to long-term value, yada, 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 right? So I wanted to do that. So what I did is I put myself out there and I said, look, okay, I'm going to do a presentation on something that I'm passionate about, and that is organizational scaling. So how do you survive the puberty of scaling, right? Because there's always things that are going to break and so forth. So I contacted another company, the product people, and I had a presentation. It's still up there on the web somewhere, about how to scale your organization and survive it at the same time. And that was the first time, unironically, that was the first time where I put myself out there and had an opinion on something to the outside, because I was always very good on doing this locally, you know, like local meetups, you know, like in person or internally in companies, but I never put myself out there. And one thing that people really need to understand, because they misjudge this about me all the time, just because I'm loud does not mean that I'm an extrovert. I'm an introvert, and I struggle a lot with being judged by others. So I sometimes just close up. Just because I talk a lot does not mean that I'm comfortable doing this. So this was the very first moment where I started to put myself out there. And from there, it started to kind of, you know, it started to amplify itself. I had people like you that gave me tips. This is how, what you should make sure that you use the systems correct. You know, like on LinkedIn, don't post too much. Try to get good hooks and all that. All of this is tactical stuff. But in the end, what it gave me is it gave me some validation from the market that what I say is actually working for these people too, and they understand it, right? So that was very important to get now to this point where I am. I can go more into detail into this entire process, but that's what it was for me in the end.
No, I could literally listen to you for hours. This imposter syndrome, thanks so much for speaking about this openly. I wouldn't say that it is more common with females than with males or something like that, but I know I'm a
literally obsessing myself with so many great people that didn't find this courage to just like speak out and start the journey. And if this is our goal for today, if we convince anybody today to start working and thinking in public, we have a win. We have a strong win right there. So yeah, this sure. is, but right now we became like goal oriented. So we should go into the nitty gritty. And maybe just like in terms of the process, yeah. I mean, writing and working and being like a leader in your company and having to post on LinkedIn, gosh, it seems like a lot to a lot of people, right? How did you systemize it? Did you write edit procedures? How did you make it happen?
So I had a goal. The goal was to get 10,000 meaningful followers. That was the very first goal that I had. Just like if we talk about LinkedIn right now, right? So as you said, it's kind of a vanity metric. But for me, it was really like having meaningful.
No, sorry, Leah, this is what you said. This is what you said. I was just quoting you on that. So I do believe that there is a strong emphasis with you on meaningful.
Yeah, no, no, sure. Okay, exactly. No, no, but like, you know, followers by itself are just, that they're a vanity metric. And I can get into why this is the case, but you need to have some kind of reach before you have any leverage, of course. But anyways, so that was the first goal. And the way that I do things is that I'm coming from a very experimental driven mindset in the sense that as long as I know the general direction to go with, I will trust that whatever is coming afterwards will guide me in the way I will get learning. So as long as I get learnings from what I do, I will learn the minimum that is necessary to do something in order to learn what I'm lacking in the future. And what I mean with that is, if you look at my post from like 6 months ago, the very first one that I did, I think I started somewhere in August to really think about this. I knew two things, 10,000 followers, post twice a day. That was it. I was not a very good copywriter. I really like, honestly, like I'm not that good in writing, I think. And, but I still thought, okay, I'm going to post twice. Then I met you in the process. You gave me some pointers and I could put those already into context because I already learned a couple of things. What is a good hook? What works with engagement? Of course, you need to like, how does the inner workings of LinkedIn work? And the methodologies that I developed out of this are very useful because they would still work if I would start from the new. So what I do, for instance, is for me, I have a WhatsApp group where I'm the only member. Whenever I have an idea, something that I hear in the car while I'm driving and I listen to podcasts of other people, if I read a lot, whenever something is interesting, I put the idea in WhatsApp, either as a voice message, because when I'm driving and I'm a responsible person, I don't write while I drive, or I just write it in there as a comment really quickly. I cannot stress how important this is. Have some form of gathering of ideas that is easy and frictionless, whatever it is. Just send yourself a message or have a notepad somewhere ready. That's the first thing. So that's a part of the idea gathering that I had. And the other thing is, and that does not work for everyone, I know that, but like for me, most of the posts that you see, I write at the same day. I do not buffer my stuff. I don't do weekly content planning or whatever, but I do reserve myself a spot in the morning when I get up at 7 or 8 o'clock, something between that, I reserve 1 hour for getting ready, for listening to other people, maybe sometimes, or writing my post. Some of these posts take like 5 to 10 minutes of work. Some of them take a full hour. That's just what it is. This is my personal growth time. And this is quite important to understand. It's not about writing something. I want to keep myself accountable that I write about something that I learned, because this is also reinforcing my learning. If I have to formalize something that I'm talking to you right now. So let's say we talk about what does product-led growth mean? The moment you write it down, you have to conceptualize something. You have to bring it into a form where someone else understands it. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You visualize it. It's a kind of a learning mechanism. So that's when I started to also notice this entire thing that I do on LinkedIn is actually helping me to also become better. It's a writing outlet. I also became now better in copywriting. I'm not a content editor. You would not hire me for writing something for you, but I got really better at this, right, over the time. And that's one of those. And what I do most of the time is I start to sketch out a framework in Miro. It's usually Miro is my graphics program. So I use Miro to sketch out an idea, to visualize it, and then I write an article for it. Because what I have ended up with right now that is different from the start is I post once a day, for sure, a high value content, and then I write an article to it or like a post. This might not be the right approach for people, but what I can tell you is that in this process, there's a couple of truths that always surface themselves. Don't overcomplicate things. You can probably focus on one little thing in your post and it will be good, right? So originally I talked about how to get an organization right. You need to empower people. You need to make them conscious and you need to hold them accountable. Now I started to notice a couple of months ago, hey, you can just start to write about one of these aspects. And now you suddenly have three posts and that's much more valuable for people because if you want to make something actionable, and that's where I get my value from, you need to go into the details and you cannot cover everything. Try to cover strategy creation in one LinkedIn post. It's total garbage. It doesn't work. And that's what I do. I am actionable to the level of you can take this and you can use this operationally in your daily work. And that's my differentiator to most of the other content creators. And that's why OpenAI does not work for them or like doesn't work for me, right? What I write is unique from my experience and I can defend it. I can go to town. And the last tip that I have for anyone in this, have an opinion. Have an opinion. Think about what you write about is something that you would say on the table when you and me, Maya, were sitting on the same table. We have a beer together. And I'm just saying like, this is what I believe in. And then we fight about it. That's what you have to put in. Don't be generic. Don't just say like, oh, maybe it should be like this or this. No, say NPS is a garbage metric. That's what it is.
That was one of your most successful posts, right?
It went crazy. It went absolutely crazy. But I can fight for this because I know I've never seen a good implementation of it. Now, I'm pretty sure someone has an idea of how to do the NPS right. That's true. But I have 22 years of experience of, in my 22 years, I have worked with for 4 or 5 years with different metrics that actually achieve better results for me and my product teams. And the great thing about this is now you have people engaging that agree, those that disagree, you get genuine insights as well, by the way, right? Because some of these people will give you genuine feedback. So what happens if you do this and if this and that? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I actually forgot to put this into the post. So this is making me better. And then you can re-release it in like 4 to 5 months as a better concept. And I will write about the NPS again in about 3 to 4 months, just as an example. But you don't need to fabricate conflict. That's not what I mean. It's just that everybody has an opinion. And sometimes an opinion can be just like, I don't understand something. You can just make a post. Guys, I don't understand the NPS. I'm a product leader. I'm standing here. Can you tell me how to make this actionable? I don't know how to do it. It never backfired on me that I was vulnerable and said, I do not understand this. Never did. I challenge you to try this.
No, I love it. I did that a couple of months ago. I asked what's the difference between positioning and messaging because of the go-to-market strategy framework that I'm developing. So it was extremely important for me. Like the technical question naturally was that to include both or just positioning in the book, right? And I really wanted to have like more than Google level of understanding of the difference within between those concepts. Those arguments create a beautiful chapter. A beautiful, rounded, holistic discussion of how you can or cannot agree with that thought. I did go with one of those. But anyways, just like to put yourself out there and to maybe be a little bit vulnerable, because what I am psychologically here struggling a little bit is that when you say have an opinion, a lot of us, at least like from Europe, would say, but stay correct. I mean, you don't want to poke this too badly, right? And this is how you beautifully presented this argument of that you can be vulnerable, that you don't have to write this is shit every single day on LinkedIn, just like to harvest attention. There are so many awesome, meaningful ways how we can do this.
Yeah, 100%. And I challenge also people to just go out there once you do have some reach and just say like, guys, I want to get better at this particular thing. Give me your best source. Stuff like this is already a post. This helps, right? If you ask intelligent questions, people will follow because you ask the correct questions because it delivered value in the comments.
I do believe that in your recipe for success, in leveraging personal brand based on product-led principles, there was one element that I know you have, but you didn't mention it. It's your hive. This is your family. These are like the people that you kind of shake these ideas with, right? Is that an important part that you would recommend to everybody, or maybe something specific to you? Where would you place it?
Here's a philosophy that I believe in the true sense of the word. And this goes for your professional life, not just LinkedIn. The impact that you have as a person. So let's say I'm being hired as a product leader in a company right now. So right now I'm the head of product at Jua. The impact that I have, if the CEO comes to me and says, like, make a business case about this big opportunity that we have. Do you think he cares whether I asked you for feedback on something very specific that you are an expert on to create this business case? No, he doesn't. He only cares whether I can bring it together and do something with it that actually has impact then afterwards in the real world where we work with. So a good example would be like, I don't know, if I have to create a business case in a domain that I have absolutely no idea from, and I'm connected with someone that knows something very specific in this domain, why wouldn't I ask them about it? Why wouldn't I just go to them and say, like, hey, look, this is the draft that I have. Can you challenge this for me before I bring it back to the CEO? The people around you are part of you. And that is very important to understand. You don't need to leverage everything by your own skills. There's nothing wrong with having a family around that just helps you with things, but you need to first admit that you don't know something. So if I would have come to you in our first talk and be like, yeah, I know how LinkedIn works, you would have never shared a video with me that was like 20 to 30 minutes ago that just got me started. I had the basics in there and it just got me started. So this is a very, very obvious value that you're going to get from people around you. I come to you because you give me honest opinions on stuff. You're not massaging my ego and tell me like how awesome I am. Well, you do that sometimes, right?
Well, I can do sometimes.
But the value that I get from people is when they actually elevate me with new knowledge. And that happens very frequently when I just say like, look, I'm really bad at this particular thing. I don't understand it. Can you help me? And if this is what you mean with the hive, right? Like, this is my immediate family. I can grow with people that are on the same path. I exchange experiences with them. Hey, did you notice this? You know, like LinkedIn is not working in this way. The way, what do you think about this post and that kind of stuff? People around me have changed in the last 5 years when I started to change the way that I think about life in general, from being friends that reaffirm me to people that criticize me. And I love this so much because I feel so safe with people that tell me when I mess up, because if they don't tell me, then I know everything is okay. Right. So this is what I say, like, have people around you that give you honest feedback, because it's the best proof in the world that somebody cares about you. It is the best proof. There's nothing better in life than someone to tell you, hey, I think this was missing the mark. Because it has no change on the value that people give to you, right? It doesn't mean that we're not friends anymore if I mess up a post. It doesn't change. You're still going to talk to me, right? So that's what I mean. We have to disconnect our personal value and the way that we see ourselves from this criticism that comes from the outside. And that goes especially for leaders.
Totally, or the stakes are a little bit higher. Before we hit the recording button, we had an interesting mini discussion. Why is it important to talk to you today, from a different background that we come from a different experience path? And just like my primary ambition here was, of course, like, Leah knows her shit. She has been working in like high-tech industry for 20 years. Just like your professional authority is something that gives you like a very specific lure. But I was wondering, maybe for younger listeners or the ones that still hasn't really beaten imposter syndrome, do you have any messages or examples how they could they can follow your lead?
One of the biggest regrets that I didn't do as a junior is to act like a junior. And I think there's an inherent strength in you going into any company as a junior and not being promoted too fast. Don't chase promotion. Enjoy the fact that you are a junior. A junior per se, like even with people that don't have a growth mindset, they kind of understand that juniors want to learn. Ask questions. And here's the most important thing that I can say to you. Like, this is a very, very actionable thing. Do not stop asking questions, even if it makes you uncomfortable. If you do not understand something 100%. Don't get tired of asking, because the moment where you start to pretend that you know something because you think that other people expect you to know something, this is where things are starting to deteriorate. This is the start where you have to pretend to know something when you actually don't. I sometimes had to go out and then I pretended that I know something. I couldn't remember the term that someone said. Like, I think one of the first terms, there were some terms like where people were starting to use abbreviations and I did not understand them. I couldn't remember them.
Can I tell you the dumbest story? Just like as a little intermezzo, I said crunch instead of churn, one of my presentation. So I was talking about crunches.
You know, I have also a funny story on this. So we were talking about ICPs, ideal customer profiles, right? So we had a big presentation on ideal customer profiles. There were a lot of PMs in this call that have never heard about that term. I know that for a fact. So there was one PM that actually spoke up because she always asked questions. And she asked, she's like, hey guys, sorry to interrupt. And this was a big meeting, you know, like where are we going as a company? Sorry guys, to interrupt. I just Googled this and it said insane clown posse. What do they have to do with this? And it was so refreshing. And this, I just made a post about this today. Don't like, it was so good. Nobody was like thinking afterwards, oh, she's such an idiot or whatever. Actually, people went to her and said like, hey, thank you so much for asking because I also didn't know what it means because we thought that people expect us to know this. Don't be like that. Ask questions. It's fine. And establish yourself as someone that is curious and that does not derive their value from like, oh, I know everything. That would be the thing that I would say is the most actionable advice that I can give. And I know how uncomfortable it is. But that was as a young person, understanding will give you the skill in the end. And that's in your power.
Wonderfully said. Absolutely love this message. Maybe also like in terms of documenting the journey. And
yeah.
What strikes me a lot with your personality is that you like are extremely grateful that you are always giving credits, empowering other people. I just see you as like as this very gracious character on social media. I don't have many of those in my network, more so trolls. But anyways, yeah. Do you also think that like this self-expressionary part is something that would help people who are a little bit younger?
For sure. The thing that I sometimes see is that there's a weird subgroup of younger people that pretend to be somewhere where they're not. You know, like they write like product leaders because they think like, oh, I need to get where Leia is, so I write like her. That's not really helping, right? You can the thing that you said is very important. You can create an entire personal branding out of your learning journey. I am the young PM that starts to learn for the first time in my life about rice, how to estimate things. Here's what I struggled with. Here's what I actually learned. This is really cool. And the voice in our head sometimes says that, oh, this is not actionable enough. This is not complex enough or whatever. No, it absolutely is. The thing that works the best is if you just go really into the details. Here's how I did it. Here's what I learned. Hey, this is so awesome. A book review. Hey, I read Inspired by Marty Kagan. It didn't work for me. Something like this, right? Like, it's not about having a contrarian opinion. It's just like you just describe how you felt and how you went through. And that's what people relate to. And that can give you the entire content that you ever need to write. And you can do this today. Things that you don't understand that you had to clarify or a podcast that you listened to that you were finding interesting, surface knowledge for others. You don't need to have the knowledge yourself through experience. Absolutely not.
You kind of inspired me with all this empowering talk to ask you a really dumb question.
Yeah.
The question is, Leah, are you ever sad if you don't get enough engagement on LinkedIn? Do you get sad if it is not resonated so beautifully?
Not sad, but I try to understand why. So sometimes I pull articles, I do, right? So like I take the post away and then I try to write a different hook in a month or so, and then I see which one performs. But I treat it as an experiment. I don't get sad anymore because look, I've been so lucky with what I achieved so far with the people that given me their attention. And I've just been blessed with this, right? So like, I'm not even disappointed because in the grander scheme, I just get a lot of value back, right? And I think I always want to be better, of course, but I'm not sad about this. No, it should be like, if I learn on the way and the bad posts are the ones that actually push me forward, then it's actually quite good, right? So like, I enjoy actually the bad posts more because from those I learn, because the other stuff is like, okay, good. I got this nailed. So now I need to get better.
Love it. How long do you let them live? So when you are analyzing this, do you do it like after a day, after a week? What's this feedback loop looks like?
Do you mean to decide whether something is bad?
Yes.
Sometimes it's an hour. So like so when I had about 5,000 followers, I was looking to get 1,000 impressions in the first hour. If it did not reach 1,000 followers, like impressions, right? Sorry, not followers, impressions, then I just took it down. Now, a good post has about 2,000 impressions, roughly like this, right? And then they really take off. That's really usually a good measure. But you have to be careful about this, because if you post it at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday where everybody's sleeping, then you're not going to get to this anyways. But I would say that's the most immediate thing. If I don't have time to hover over a post, then I wait for a day or two. The reason for this is that I want to have high performing posts on my profile if someone comes to my profile page, and that they see a video of me. That's very, very important. So for videos, I don't do this. Videos have lower engagement. They always do. But I use them as a piece to make sure that someone can experience Lea in a video, rather than having to go through my CV and try to see what I actually did. So the product like growth guide, a video, and high performing posts is basically the image that you get from me if you go to my page.
It's fantastic. Now it's so well done. And also the video production grew dramatically over the last couple of months. You did quite a good job there as well, like with your podcast and everything. All the resources will, of course, be linked to the end of the episode. There's another like snippet that caught my attention when you said like posting at a certain hours and you know how we are in growth. Oh, what's the best time to post on LinkedIn? Do you have any findings, something that works for you? What would be a good try if people are just starting out? Let me rephrase it like this.
I think it's more important that you do post. So that's the first thing, right? But like, let's say you have that nailed. I think reserving a specific time in your day is probably the best thing. Now, if you can optimize it, I post in Europe, right? So like I'm on the CET scale. So I try to post around 9 o'clock. I do notice three different time zones where your stuff gets just pushed. And it doesn't mean like that this is the only time where you should post, but like that's where you get connection requests and a lot of engagements. There's a European time zone, there's an American time zone, and there's an Indian time zone, or like the Asian time zone. Like India, for some reason, is very, very big in this region as well. And then you get the connection requests from Indian people. And it's usually for all three time zones. It's in the morning and in the evening when work stops. That's kind of what I have in my head. So like for Europe, it's 9 o'clock and then 5 o'clock. And then the Americans are also starting to get up in the morning when it's 5 o'clock in Europe, right? So you have these two kind of overlap, that kind of thing. But I'm not that religious about it anymore. When inspiration hits me, I'm going to post it. Not on 1 o'clock in the morning, but, you know, because it doesn't, for my reach, it doesn't matter anymore. My post usually takes off, even if it has low engagement at the start.
Because they're consistently awesome, sometimes so awesome that I don't even understand them.
I've been
learning a ton from you. It's amazing content. I've been recommending your stuff to dozens of people on a weekly basis. You're a part of my mood boards now.
Thank you.
Before we went into a little bit of an awkward conversation right there, Lea, I cannot wait to ask you what's next for you. So where is this journey heading forwards? You have changed the job this year already, and you have been an advisor to multiple companies, but what's the end game?
I can tell you what my yearly growth plan is.
That's a good substitute, yeah.
So I might or might not show up on a really big publication that is dear to me. I cannot name it right now, but like that is something that I want to achieve. I want to speak on 4 huge conferences about product-led growth in the company that I'm working at. So like I'm very passionate about where I work at as as the head of product in Jua. So what we do is we try to change everything around weather and climate. I honestly think that we can have some meaningful impact in the world. And I'm not just saying that, it's really because I believe in that, right? So moving this company up somewhere into the market where it just blows your socks off, where you will be proud of what I achieved and I'm going to be proud of myself. That is one of my goals. And the way that I do this is by consulting other companies, because what I started to notice is it does not only pay well, It also gives you domain knowledge and insights from other people's problems that I can then use in my main job. And I try to, you know, all of this is kind of working together to make me better as a product leader. And that's my goal for 2023, to really kick ass in that sense. You know?
What are the three areas that people come for your help with the most? Because like product led growth is so broad, right, as an area. So what are some specific use cases that
pivoting,
attract people to you?
Yeah, pivoting from sales led to product led growth. That is the biggest one, because for this, you need to have the biggest skill spread. You need to understand sales, marketing, product, and growth. The second thing is a more basic one, like we're pre-series A, how do we get now to the series A funding round? So like, what should we do? And then I just do more product market fit finding. And the other thing is like this transition from product market fit to scaling. Those are usually SaaS companies, more, not always, most of the time SaaS companies in B2B that are series A, series B, or a little bit before that. So I help getting to the next funding round. By improving the product so much that you actually have something to present, right?
Interesting. I wanted to bet that you will say metrics, but you didn't. So that was interesting.
Well, kind of. I mean, I help people, I help companies understand retention and surface it. And that's a good metric. There you go.
Okay, cool. Just so that we have like a fluffy buzzword as well. This is, you know, it's a professional podcast. We should use them. All righty. Leah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I get so energized. I get so hyped by your contagious energy, honesty, and zero bullshit approach. You strike me like as one of the most interesting people that I know. Thank you so much for being a role model on this incredible journey of yours. I can't wait to keep on following your stuff. So before we say goodbye, let's just give a little hint. What's the best way to continue the conversation with you for our listeners?
Engage with me on LinkedIn. That's the easiest way. I will not answer to everyone, unfortunately. That's not possible anymore. But like, if you see my content, engage with it and let me know if something is not good. I really appreciate the constructive feedback a lot. And that's the best thing. That's the biggest gift that you can give me.
Fantastic. Also, like, I have a little hack when it comes to engaging with you.
Tell me.
You produce to the level that I can no longer comprehend. So
that's,
I'm subscribed. No. It's fine. It's just like my limited bandwidth because I have to write a book and sit. But anyways, I'm subscribed to your newsletter and I put a star there. And on the weekends, I'm reading the things that were most popular on LinkedIn that you expand in the articles. Yeah. So that's an excellent way for me to keep up with your productivity.
Yeah, I have a newsletter and I have a podcast, of course, right? The podcast is also with big growth leaders and stuff, right? But like, yeah, of course. Yeah. Thank you so much. I forgot half my stuff. Yeah, that's a good point.
All righty. Thank you so much for listening to the pod. You know how to connect with Leah. And our challenge for this episode was really to get you moving. So Leah, do you want to do a final CTA? What's our message for the listeners regarding their personal brands?
Find people that support you so hard, like the way that you did with me. Now, they don't know what that means, but you have been absolutely invaluable for me. And I think surround yourself with people that push you into the unknown, and just put yourself out there. Silence the imposter syndrome. Just push through it.
Love it. Love it. My band in action. Thank you so much for being an awesome guest today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Take care. Ciao.
Ciao. Thank you.